over here.
I have one sitting on a shelf at home, but I have the other thing.
Left from some other time in my life.
Okay. Let me begin with introductions. I am Nancy Carson, your current chair, and I represent LA Harbor College's COC.
I'm Gerald Holter. This is my first meeting. I represent LA Trade Technical College, which I've worked with for many years with our businesses there and with their foundation.
It's officially afternoon. Good afternoon. I am Nabil Abu Ghazali, president of West Los Angeles College.
And I'm Ethel McClatchy. I'm the senior representative.
I'm Don Seguchi. I represent East Los Angeles College.
I'm Bob Courtney. I am a member at large.
I'm Donna Smith, representing Harris College.
Dave Gomez, labor representative from the 5EW Local 11 and the National Electrical Contractors Association.
Good to hear you. Eva Holmes, representing Southwest College, and this is my second official meeting.
Did you wear a visitor early?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was a visitor.
Richard Slauson, I'm an at-large representative, formerly with the LA Orange County Building and Construction Trades Council.
Tom Hall, I'm the interim executive director for the facilities planning development for the district.
I'm Camille Goulet, I'm the general counsel for the district.
Mona Field from the board, and with deepest appreciation to our DCOC, thank you.
Can I add a legal cautionary note to
yes,
point that? So, because it's a Brown Act meeting, members of the public are entitled to attend without identifying themselves. So, even though we do this to be nice to each other, nobody, I mean, the members of the committee, of course, but the other people don't necessarily have to.
Steve Springer, Public Affairs for LACCD and the Bill.
Carrie Deller, Executive Assistant to Tom Hall.
I'm Deputy Chancellor.
Thank you. Yes.
Christine Mares, Inspector General. And Allison Crabtree, I'm with KPMG.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Davis.
Okay, and Jaden, you'd like to introduce yourself.
That was unfair. I'm sorry.
Way to put me in the spotlight. My name is Jaden Letkins. I'm the student representative. I currently go to Valley College. So. Thank you. I try and be as professional as I can be. I was kind of worried about my color tie choice today, but I was like, oh.
It's a nice tie.
You don't have to wear a tie.
Good job.
You can even wear jeans.
I like the purple. I best friends today.
We didn't get the memo.
Okay. We've got what might be a good is, first, again, is are there any members? I guess this is the next thing on here. There was a report. On Wednesday, I had the honor and stress of reporting to the Capital Construction Committee of the board about what's going on. And mainly, I reported using our annual report with a few comments along the way. It seemed to be well received. I'm going to leave my note here. The board asked some questions, none of which were horribly difficult. And they wanted to express their appreciation of all the work that we're doing as volunteers. And they wanted to, if we have any further suggestions and whatnot, recommendations that need to go forward to the board, we will continue with that dialogue as the ones that they have for us, they will continue going forward. We are supposed to meet, at least the executive committee are supposed to meet with members of the board at quarterly. That would be next month, and I am out of town next month, and so I have asked if we could move it to early April when I will be back in town. And then we'll go from there. It was really a very routine thing. I haven't spoken before a group for a while. little harder than I thought it would be. That's that piece. Public speakers, do we have any that want to be noted like this? I have no cards or no pieces. All right. Approval of the minutes of the last meeting. I was not here, so I need to have someone who was here to...
Move they be adopted.
Moved by Richard.
Second.
Second by Mr. Gomez, right?
Mm-hmm.
David, may I call you by David or Mr. Gomez? Yes.
David.
Thank you. I can remember that. I had a son called that. all those in favor of accepting the minutes as they were presented, or as they've been corrected, actually, on the draft?
Aye.
Where's the corrected?
Well, it's the ones you have that came to you.
Okay.
Mine have the red.
It's a draft.
And after that.
Okay.
It's always a draft until we approve them, and then it becomes a final. Anyone not accepting the minutes? Anybody abstaining? Okay. Actually, I'm abstaining too, since I wasn't at the meeting, and I have no idea whether the minutes are right or wrong. All right, let's move on. Subcommittee report. By the way, Mr. Axelman is normally here, is ill today. Yes, sir.
In the minutes, it indicates that there's supposed to be an election today, and I do not see it on the agenda.
I could respond to it if you wanted to. If any of you read your handbook carefully,
I did.
On page something or another, 1525, it states when the office should change, and it is not now. It is the first meeting in July. And so he will discuss it, and he actually and it also makes a point that the chair will be appointed by annually at the first meeting by the chancellor. So he's going to speak to that, and that's why it's not on the reflection of the chair. E2 on page 25. I was reading this on a plane flight across the nation. That's pretty bored. That's how I found
it. That's how you took it out.
Actually, I want to thank you, Camille, because I think you did a great job. I'm sure that there will be some people will want to add some other things, but somebody coming in like I did initially, I had no idea, and I found it funny, and I thank you, even though I'm wearing a robe. Anyway, that's why it's not on the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
But the chancellor wants to speak about it later. Okay, the subcommittee report comes from Richard.
Good afternoon to everyone. The advisory committee of the DCOC met first on January 27th, and the first subject for discussion was the DCOC possibly requesting an outside attorney. The advisory committee met at 10:30 here at the district offices and reviewed the question. Present at that meeting were Nancy Carson, Elliot Axelbrand, Dan Swartz, and myself. The committee discussed the pros and cons of hiring an outside attorney to provide legal counsel to the DCOC. Committee members cited their views on the added costs to the district, on the district's ability to provide its legal advice and specialty legal services versus the needs of the DCOC to fulfill its responsibility, and if the district's legal staff can fulfill the DCOC's needs. Committee members differed in their opinions on this question. Some believe that the district had shown a lack of response on requests that the DCOC had made, and others thinking that the costs would be more than the benefits independent legal services would provide. On the pro side, hiring an attorney avoids conflict of interest concerns using district legal counsel. An independent attorney for the DCOC can provide ongoing information on committee structure, committee rules of order, Brown Act requirements and limits. Also could be directed by the committee to investigate particular issues. On the con side, cost of an attorney for the DCOC would be paid out of LACCD general fund budget, and with the current budget constraints, it would place it would be too great of a burden on educational services at this time. Also, no substantive issues would warrant different legal services than those that the district can provide. Also, an attorney on retainer would not be providing input on a regular basis. However, the cost would continue for attending each GCOC meeting. The committee members suggested gathering information on cost and availability of law firms that have broad legal capabilities and to review it at another advisory committee meeting. No further recommendation on that subject was made at this meeting. I'm staying on this particular subject. I'll go on to the next meeting date, which was February the 16th, for the advisory committee. At this meeting, the attendees were Nancy Carson, Richard Slauson, Dan Swartz, Donna Smith, Tom Hall, and Dr. Barrera. The subject again, DCOC requesting outside attorney. The advisory committee met at 1 p.m. to discuss the to continue the discussion of the request that the district hire an outside attorney to provide legal services to the DCOC. Committee members reviewed information from attorneys that had they had contacted on pricing of legal services and views on the services that might be provided. The response that they received indicated the cost per hour for an independent attorney would be somewhere between $300 and $400 per hour. They again reviewed the concerns about the district having been responsive or not to the needs of the DCOC and the cost of the district if an outside independent attorney would be provided. After the discussion, it was decided that an action item would be made to the DCOC at the next possible agenda time to hire or an attorney and put out an RFP for input from legal firms. This, however, would be made for the DCOC to be able to discuss and vote on its merits and would not be a recommendation from the advisory committee. Also at the January 27th meeting of the advisory committee, the subject of the review of the Inspector General program was undertaken. It was discussed that the DCOC's use of the Inspector General to review basic operational processes for funding, bidding, and awarding construction contracts or the other pre-construction contracts paid for with bond funds. Committee members want a review of the standards and processes for IG investigation. It was also suggested that DC members should be voicing any concerns that they may have about the district reports, IG reports, bond process, or other issues that fall within their oversight responsibility. Mm-hmm. The advisory committee then recommended that an ad hoc committee be formed to review and recommend future Inspector General investigations. At the February 16th meeting of the advisory committee, also discussed on the agenda was the community college individual community colleges reports on the status of individual campus bond construction. District Facilities Executive Director Tom Hall provided copies of the district's 9 campuses bond construction status reports for the advisory committee review. After reviewing the different reports, it was recommended that the executive summary of the LA City College's project manager Harrison Associates would provide the information that the DCOC would need in future review and the future reports from the colleges be in this format. And a copy of that particular report was passed out to everyone, and I see that some of you have it in front of you right there on top of your book. And it looks like this. It says executive summary on the cover. It was a very concise and easy to read report and provided most of the information that the committee would want to review at each of its meetings. So that is the recommendation for the future reports. And that was the report of the advisory committee. And I would like to make a motion that we agendize the motion on hiring or not hiring a independent attorney for the DCOC at the next meeting.
A committee motion doesn't require a second, and so that comes from the advisory committee as a motion. Any further discussion on this? It will be discussed more fully at the next meeting because we do not vote on anything that has not been
Regretfully, I'm on both those on that committee and I missed both of you. But my question would just be a little change on what you're talking about. Is that maybe if our current council, the district council, was to give us, get to a point in time where we're discussing a legal issue as a committee, and they say, because of their professionalism, they say, we recommend for us to get into this particular issue, we do suggest that you bring in some outside counsel. Maybe have it more prompted from that direction rather than just a carte blanche legal representation. It would be costly, okay. I think.
Bob, the motion that's on the table right now is that we consider it the next thing whether we want to hire an attorney or not. Your discussion, I think, would probably be more appropriate at that meeting. Unless I'm being,
I'm a little in the gray area there. I think.
I am too, so I'm kind of.
Well, I mean, it has to do with whether we want to continue discussing
whether we want to put it on.
Yes, ma'am.
Just to assist you in your decision making, because there's an opportunity here, when you're considering this, you may want more data about firms that might be interested, and it happens that I'll be advertising to refresh the district's existing panel, which in other words, to add some people to the, some firms to the panel, in March before your next meeting. So if you don't, without your objection, I'll include it as a potential assignment in case somebody wants to submit a proposal. That's material that can be provided to you as part of your consideration.
That would be very helpful.
The committee wanted to have RFPs responses in front of the DCOC before a decision is ever made. So you can get some detailed information on what would be provided, how much it would cost in reality, because really, although we did get some feedback from a couple of law firms, it was kind of generalities at this point, and RFP would really cement for all of us what the real cost would be. So, and I would expect that Camille would respond with some a written report as well at the next meeting on what services you have provided, so we can get an assessment of really what you have done for this committee and how you could fulfill its needs.
Okay.
Rather than just depending on a response from outside attorneys.
Is the list that you are developing in March, you're getting responsible, is it coming from an RFP from the district?
Yes.
So you have an RFP out right now that you're collecting?
Well, no, I'm about to have an RFP out in March. And so what I would do is add to the list of potential areas serving as counsel to the DCOC so that those firms that might be interested might submit their proposals specific to that, and that you'll have that opportunity to look at those things too.
I appreciate that very much. Yes, go ahead. It was your report. Do you take it? Yes.
If I may. I'm not quite sure why we need an outside legal counselor. Are they going to be just on call when we need them, or are they going to be specific to certain inquiries that we are projecting to look into?
That was in the discussion at the last DCOC, kind of a broad discussion of what services would be provided, and we haven't nailed that down yet. There isn't really an answer at this point other than it's expected that they would attend the meetings, and then if there are any issues that arose that needed a special report back on, that they would do that service as well. But at this point, without a RFP back, we really weren't able to, and this committee was not charged with the responsibility of trying to determine exactly what the services would be.
I think that it's, there's a lot of strong opinion on both sides whether this committee needs an attorney or not, both within the subcommittee as well as from when I'm reading the minutes from the last meeting. So basically, this motion is just to bring it back up to discussion after having a little more information. It is not necessarily saying that that this motion says we're going to go. I expect everybody to agree, and we're going to go ahead.
Yeah, this is not a recommendation.
Because no one except this group as a whole can make that final vote. So
we're just putting it on the agenda.
We're just putting it on the agenda so that we can have a more thorough discussion. When that would be one of the major topics on the agenda. Yes, Ethel.
Again, looking at the minutes, it looks like a discussion of this took place, and the general feeling was no on getting this. And but Chancellor La Vista talked about developing a job description purpose statement so it'd be definitive about what this person would do for the DCOC. So this had been discussed already.
Yes.
And they also discussed the commentary and cost analysis was already discussed, so we're revisiting what we've discussed.
There's a motion on the table right now that we put on, agendize the item of hiring an attorney at the next meeting.
Someone call the question? Call the question.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those not in favor? All of those abstaining. You had another motion to make? Yes, whether people agree to use this form. We had discussion from another time that this committee as a whole has the knowledge that comes from the report that has the cost and construction of what's going on at each of the colleges. But we really don't have a sense of those people who represent our college's COCs of what's going on that isn't necessarily in numbers and this sort of thing. And so that's why we went back to do the issue of saying, let's have one form of a report that would be only basically responding to questions for a minute or two from each representative from each college. And this is why we brought this form to you now. As a research of that committee, to try for the next meeting, each of the reps from the colleges will put together a report similar to this form. And whether we should limit it to the 9 people that are representing the college because they're the ones that have to do the work or not, I don't know. But I do need a motion from the committee that has to do with this form because they did make that thing.
I move that we adopt this as the form to be used by all community college districts in reporting to the DCOC.
Second.
Do we get to see the form?
You have it.
This.
Well, this is the form.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Basically requiring all the school districts to provide an executive summary of what...
Right, of what's going on. And this is merely just kind of a format, so that it's something we bring in, describe it, and then have it as a basis of a very quick question-answer thing each time. Probably an agenda item that wouldn't be more than 10 minutes. So I'm looking at a really quick... It's a way of getting each of us to say this is what's going on, other than the data numbers, which are also valuable, but we don't need to repeat those.
If I may, as a person who sits on a college CLC, I think this is a good model for us to use. And this isn't the school that I represent, but I think this is a good model. And I know as we were working on the college CLC and trying to figure out exactly what we were supposed to do and what we weren't supposed to do, these kind of issues came up. So I think this can provide some clarity, and I think it's a pretty good model to use.
And we did discuss in our meeting that if we needed to tweak it later on, because if we find out something is or isn't working very well, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
But it's a good way to start with the uniform way.
Mr. Hall had started gathering this information at the committee's request, and he presented us with a binder with reports from the various colleges, with many different designs. Each one is different in some way, and it makes it very difficult to read and compare to one another. And I have a couple of copies of this. If you want to pass this around, and everybody's more than happy that you take a look at it. But you'll see that they're all different, and this really did seem the best and simplest and most comparable form if each campus provided the same outline.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Just from the perspective of a college president, we're delighted that you are looking at the quantitative data that you get in, you know, the systematized data that you get in a dashboard report. This qualitative report, very brief as it is, really lets you know what's going on in practical terms. On its own, of course, it's entirely insufficient because it's just descriptive, but it really balances and gives meaning to what you see on a dashboard in terms of dollars and progress rates and so on. So I'm delighted you will be looking at this as well. It gives us a chance to communicate to you concisely.
Thank you. Thanks.
Carol and I have discussed this a couple times, and I told us we'll bring it up again today. The one thing, I like the forum very much, and I think it's a great move forward. The one thing it seems to be lacking is something I've been kind of saying for a long time. I would love to see a summary in each of these reports that would discuss the highlights and the lowlights since the last report. Things that maybe are discussed that were going to happen, that didn't happen, and reasons why. Things that did happen and happened, and they happened better than you expected. There's something to give us kind of a highlights and lowlights from one report to the next would be a big benefit on this one.
Yeah, if you look on the back of this particular form, on the back page, you'll see things that we discussed to be added. And what you're talking about is the exceptions, things that are changed from the original plan that would be included in this report as well.
Yeah, I saw that. I just wonder if it shouldn't be clear, you know, highlights and lowlights, kind of forcing.
I was supposed to talk about it, and I forgot that it was on the back of here.
But just forcing that issue.
Also, what we wanted added was the bidding results, which was a handout that was provided today as well. Oh, you haven't handed it out yet? Well, Tom is going to hand it out. But it shows the original engineer's estimate for projects, the contractor that was the low bidder, and the bid result, the final bid, so you can compare with what was expected compared to what the final bid price really is on the various projects that are being awarded as we continue on, and that would be made a part of this report as well.
Yes, sir.
This is dated August 2011. To what extent has it been updated to reflect the moratorium?
This was the last report that came from that. We were just looking for a format.
Okay.
We're not looking for
the content.
What City College put in their report specifically format for each of us to do.
Because it's not accurate.
There will be an issue to bring in mind is that we meet every 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, would like to do it. Some of the committees meet quarterly. So it might require that the representative from the college committee at least have a phone call or something with the president or with the program manager at that college in that month, in that period that they don't meet, to get a little of the update they might want to put in that month's report. Because, as I say, most of them meet quarterly, and we meet every 2 months, so there's a little lack of sync there, but I think it could be done. Most of you are creative enough to know how you could do it. Any other discussion about whether we should accept this as we could even do it on a trial, but I'm not saying accept it from the committee. The motion was that we accept this for the 9 members that represent colleges to use this presented report, and the next time it would be used would be at the April meeting. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those against? Abstaining. Carried. All right. Let's see how it works. If it doesn't work, we'll go back to the drawing board. Yep.
I have a question not regarding the format, but the content, and how we actually go about getting this information. I mean, what kind of latitude do we have on the campus to do this?
Yeah, so I'm going to be sharing this format with all the CPM directors, and telling them that this is going to be something that we will expect them to present to each of the committees, and that the committees will be carrying it forward. And I'll also ask them to forward me a copy as well, so I know that it is taking place. And I also have the discussion with the presidents and let them know that this is something that's being asked of their CDM directors.
Okay, I noticed this is created by, I guess, Harrison and Associates, so it must have been created by the CDM, is that correct?
Right.
And what is, as a representative of the college, what is our responsibility other than carrying this in, so to speak? I'm not quite sure where our involvement is if this is being created by the CPM.
Well, you could be adding to it, too. You can get the report from the CPM and put together... Yes?
Go ahead. No, what I thought we had discussed that this would be the format, and it would be in print. Mm-hmm. And what we could do is highlight some of what... by speaking at our meeting about what's on here, not reading it, of course, and that how we were going to get these in advance, and we were going to keep each monthly one or
bi-monthly
one in our book or some way so that we can keep it referred to. But the person, the representative themselves, would have it and could highlight or stress a certain part of it or something that you know about this that you want to present. It's not going to be a long report verbally, that's the whole idea, but it's in print.
And the form itself, the CPM will give you some information and whatnot. If they've got this form, they may write it, but you can edit it if you feel that something's missing or something needs to be on there. What we want is a kind of a mouse view, bird's eye view, whatever, of what qualitative issues, if any, are going on at the college that don't show up in our quantitative data that may highlight that maybe we have something we need to pay attention to.
So if I may, this will be something that each committee discusses at the campus. So this will be presented at the campus with the representative that is represented to the DCOC will be in that discussion. So the revisions should take place right then and there at the campus, at the meeting, and then that information, the revised report, would come through, and we put together a nice booklet for everybody with all the pieces in there.
Okay. Yes, thank you. It doesn't alleviate the responsibility of the project managers there of providing you with the detailed information on facts and figures. This is an executive summary, but it's something that will lead you with the discussion, hopefully, to review particular sections that you might have more questions on from a summary that's provided to you. I mean, you get some of these handouts that they have that are so detailed, it would take you hours just to go through it rather than at a committee meeting having something simple, a summary, so that you can be directed to any particular issues that might arise in your mind.
And that, from the college's committee that has this, as Tom was saying, things that might be revised are worthy of comments, perhaps, at this meeting, how it was received or whatever. So there would be an opportunity for the representative to speak to some issues of it.
Nabil? Yeah, if I may, operationally speaking, the presidents typically get a weekly report that looks like this with some greater detail. Over the period of whatever your local college citizens oversight committee timeline is, there's an accumulation of these reports that really ought to be reported out by the CPM typically, but under the direction of the president. If they have for you this report in draft form initially, then through the presentation about progress through that period that you're getting, you can actually edit this document for understanding, both your understanding of the project and also for your ability to convey that message. We like to think of the meeting at the local college oversight committee as a learning experience rather than just a reporting out. So it's a dialogue that should benefit you to the point where when you come here, you're conversant in what's transpired in an entire construction project on a college over over a quarter of a year. I mean, it's a tough thing to keep up with day to day on campus, let alone once every quarter. So think of the Oversight Committee meeting as sort of the large lecture, but you've got the cliff notes in advance to prepare from and edit. And then, you know, there will be those times when your local meeting may be, out of sync with this meeting. Frankly, Elliot Axelband is my college's rep, and we make a good point of communicating with some regularity about what's happening. And so I would encourage you to reach out and keep yourself updated with your college president, because the last thing you want to do is to be surprised by news that you're carrying on a piece of paper to this committee. And from my perspective as a president, the last thing I want is for my representative to be showing up here unsure of what we're getting up to on campus, because that's not the note that we're trying to strike with you here about openness and our eagerness for you to get a sense of what the challenges and opportunities and progress are.
I believe now there's a motion on the table. All those in favor of trying this report at the next meeting, try submitting these reports. I can't remember if we voted on it.
Yes,
we voted on it. Okay, thank you. Because we went back to the topic, and usually when I finished, I thought, wait a minute, that's why I went over to him and I asked, did we vote this for this already? Because the discussion started. Forgive me.
One other question is a timing of the production of this report by the CPM. Because we have a meeting on March the 6th,
just the college reps,
a campus meeting. I don't think it's going to, this is a new process for them, is that right? So, it's not likely that we would have something.
He could communicate with you afterwards. You don't have to keep your communication only to when you need it.
Big part?
No, he's saying they won't have time to get this report finished.
But in March, but we're not meeting again in April. So you can have, he can have your email or something else to give you that information after that March meeting.
They can produce this for you overnight. They can produce this for you overnight. Believe me, they can be responsive. It doesn't take a lot of lead time. Someone will sit down and hammer out the report because these items are all fresh on their minds. It's all they do.
And we're out of sync. All of us meet at different times. Mine meets next Monday.
Just for clarification, we can ask for materials in between our meetings. But who's the proper channel to go through for that information? Do we go through the college presidents, or do we go through the CPM?
It depends what you're asking for. What we have asked as a committee now, that the 9 representatives from the college develop a report like this to present every 2 months, that we just highlight the things that are not quantitative that we have from other sources.
Okay.
And they, as members of that committee, have the same rights as we, as members of this committee, can go to the chancellor, to go to other things. But the CPM and say, okay, I need to get that report together. Is there something I need to know that is now the latest update that I will bring to this? So the CPM or the president gets a report every week, then go make an appointment with the president, take him a few minutes to get those reports. We're not trying to be detectives. We're just trying to make sure this committee knows what's going on.
Uh-huh. And one of the things that prompted this was we were supposed to be making reports to colleges, and there was no consistency on what this report was supposed to do. And so as a result, not much was coming forth. So we wanted to have some kind of uniformity that would mean something to the committee beside those charts that come out. And so that's what prompted us to come up with this format.
Yeah. I would urge you to work through the president's office until you have a clear working relationship with the CPM. That way, if you're not getting a responsiveness, the president is held to account for that. If you call the CPM and they've got contractors calling and all sorts of issues and they're not responsive to you, that's not their primary assignment. They're directly responsible to the president. That's a good way to start.
Yes.
You bring up an excellent question, which relates to a lot of my questions historically. Is it how much responsibility from a committee standpoint should we look at the presidents for making sure we're reported any irregularities or some of the problems that have come up in the past, such as the things the IG is coming up with? How much responsibility should we be looking to the presidents in general, not just you,
sure,
for reporting to us, making sure we are aware of these things, that you are the man or woman on site with your eyeballs watching everything.
Yeah. Well, when you think of this body here as the District Citizens Oversight Committee, this is the body that really provides the citizens' oversight to the entire bond program. If the local committee is not informed, then you can't, you know, as a representative of that committee, you are unable to communicate to this oversight body. So regardless of, you know, the legality of what the local body's authority is, legally speaking, you're still the messenger to this authority. And so you have to be able to know about these things. So, you know, I would say you really need to have total transparency.
Right. So the president should take a certain amount of responsibility for making sure that the committees are operating correctly and that we are become aware of what's going on.
But you can certainly facilitate that transparency by reaching out on a regular basis, depending on your relationship and how frequently your committee meets and so on. It's easier to be responsive when there is that give and take dialogue going on.
Yeah. I'm just looking for a procedure, because we can't go out asking questions. We're here to listen to situations and evaluate situations. So, I mean, we can't uncover the problems. We have to become aware of the problems through the presidents, the committees, what have you. And I think that's part of our historic problem, is we have not been getting that information about the problems and the methods of solving the problems. And how the solutions have been, you know.
Right, but again, think of it pragmatically, rather than a formal flow of authorized communication, if you will. When you think of it pragmatically, it's really important, ultimately, for the information to flow to this body, and it is better that you carry it than that we read about it in the press.
Right, but we're in a situation of the tree falling in the forest here, though. I mean, if we're not there to watch it fall over, we're not necessarily going to know where it fell. So that's what I'm saying about the campuses. We don't know what's going on in these campuses.
That's what we're trying to do.
I know, but we're responsible for knowing what's going on. And that's the only thing I've been saying from the beginning.
Let me suggest that you're responsible for being you. I'm pointing at you.
That's okay.
In your college assignment, you are responsible for being available to know. And you said this. You're not. It's not your job to go and dig and so on. You are the channel for communication between the college and this body. So it is the college's responsibility to communicate through you, to report through you.
That's my point.
Okay.
Exactly.
And I think I'm being pretty concise with that.
Yeah,
it is the college's responsibility to report through you to this body.
Right. And problems in the past, we did not get that reporting, and that is great.
Trying to solve those.
Now we're solving them. No, I think Tom's doing a great job in the area, no question. Mr. Alvesta, and so I'm just...
Okay, if we... finish this. I'd like to move the agenda if at all possible. And I'm also going to pass away around the sign-in sheet because I think some of you came in after it went around before, so they help the record keepers keep us legal. Is this Terry?
Yes.
Would you introduce yourself? Because I don't know you. You're new to me. And I apologize.
Okay, I'm Terry Anderson. I'm representing Los Angeles Valley College. I was here 2 meetings ago.
Right, I remember that.
Last meeting I had some eye surgery and I couldn't make it.
I wasn't here last meeting either.
And I spent about, I think, 6 hours driving around blocks trying to find the parking.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It was part of the initiation.
All right. Camille, it is your time on the agenda.
Probably the most legally significant occurrence at the moment is, since your last meeting, the Board of Trustees adopted a decision to debar FTR International and declare them as a not responsible contractor. You probably had the opportunity to read about that somewhere. The action was taken by the Board of Trustees to debar the firm and find them not responsible for 5 years. And what that means is that they would be precluded from bidding on any district projects for that time period. The follow-on to that was terminating some of the projects for convenience. The impact of this decision is that there were 5 colleges affected. East Los Angeles College had a bid pending, and since the board found them to be a not responsible bidder, that bid was disqualified for simple term. And in addition to that, the terminations for convenience were for Mission College and West Los Angeles College, and also for the stadium project at Pierce College. And there was one other small contract at Pierce regarding some heating, ventilating, and air conditioning. So FTR, within days, filed its litigation to challenge the decision. There will be a hearing on that in March, and probably not a decision from the court before April. However, I think it would be safe to say that we can anticipate litigating this issue for many years to come. I'm just not going to mince words and tell you we'll be litigating this for 2 to 5 years, I think.
Then I can come back.
So that's probably the most legally significant occurrence that's arisen since your last meeting. Coming with that, of course, with terminating the contracts for convenience as well as debarring the contractor, quite a number of the subcontractors have now filed what are called stop notice actions. And a stop notice action is an action to collect from a subcontractor or a material supplier saying that they haven't been properly paid by the general contractor. So those matters are deploying a lot of lawyers. We were already in litigation with FTR regarding the Allied Health Building at Valley College, so we now have two different legal matters pending. Any other questions I can answer about pending legal matters?
Camille, yeah. Somewhere I read in all the information about the DCOC that the contractor, although he may be have been found with irregularities, I'm trying to pick my word, in other districts and other construction projects, does not become a factor in evaluating them as a preferred contractor. Is that true? Or explain it to me.
Well, okay. Yeah, I was going to say it's a little imprecise. So there are processes that are for pre-qualification of contractors, and that does place a significant cost burden on a potential contractor, but it has the effect of perhaps screening for financial viability or other kinds of things like that. That process hasn't been used too heavily by the district in the past, but it is available to us as a tool. And in a pre-qualification process, that those issues, depending on the nature of those issues, might come to light. And when I say depending on the nature, it depends a lot on what occurs. By comparison, the contractor FEI was also debarred by the board, and that debarment was sustained by the Court of Appeal after a couple of years of litigation. And in the FEI case, one of the bases for seeking the debarment was a history by the firm of not properly paying or hiring its workforce. So there were contentions that they were hiring people under the table, that they were hiring people who weren't lawfully authorized to work in the United States. They were hiring people who weren't authorized, who weren't being paid prevailing wage, which is an important legal requirement for public work. And so there was a history of that at Los Angeles Unified, which had been litigated. And so the fact that those offenses were repeated on our jobs became a material factor in the consideration of debarring for the district, which was ultimately sustained. So the answer is, as usual, it's complicated.
as well, Camille, you can expand on this too. If the state of California is notified or it becomes aware of local debarments, they can debar the contractor from bidding all public works for a period of years in the state of California rather than in an individual area.
Right. So.
And how about pursuing for fraudulent damages and that sort of thing? Do you do any of that?
We have a number of different things going on where we're pursuing either an architect or a contractor or for things that relate to flawed design or flawed performance. And so we do that, but we have to be judicious about it, because the money we spend chasing that is money we can't spend building buildings, which is the primary purpose of the program. So we have to, you know, we have to be smart about how we pursue those. And we do have quite a few different litigation matters pending that relate to those issues. Any other questions I can answer?
Is there anything else going on with Bandicamp that we have to be aware of?
Oh, see, now I'm trying desperately to sit down before somebody asks that.
Sorry. I don't see any speakers from them in front of us right now, but I thought
okay.
They may come out the next meeting at me.
So for the benefit of the uninitiated, the Bandicamps Coalition filed 4 different actions against the district. 2 of them were actions contending that unlawful use of bond funds as taxpayer actions. Both of those actions were dismissed by the court, and the time for appeal has run. So those have been resolved in favor of the district. The other 2 actions were brought pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act, which we call CEQA. Okay, and one of those actions was dismissed by the Superior Court, and the Vandycamps Coalition has filed an appeal of that. And so we're currently in briefing on appeal on that case. The 4th action, which was actually the very first one filed, was also brought under CEQA. Although the court ruled against us last fall, we've been wrangling back and forth regarding the actual terms of what the court may order us to do as a consequence of that determination. And we have briefing going on regarding that, and I'm anticipating the court will set a hearing regarding that in April, I'm guessing.
Any other questions? Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Christine.
Yes, I think I'm just going to give my report from here and you can all hear me.
That's fine. Okay. Speak up.
We can't look at you. Christine, would you like to sit here? There's a chair down there. At the end, then we get a look at you.
Sit here.
It's a good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So it's been a little while since I've been here. I just wanted to kind of recap, let's say, the end of the year 1 for the IG's office and talk about what we're doing as we're transitioning into the second year. We completed all but 1 audit of the first year work plan. Actually, all of 2. We've transferred 1. We extended the scope on our change order audit, and we're moving that into year 2 to expand the scope on it, given that change orders is such a broad area, and we want to make sure that we have enough time to look at everything. I'm here today to talk to you about the last audit that we completed, our bond fund audit, and I'll get to that at the end of. I just want to give you an update first. We have 1 audit that's pending that's going to go to the board in the next month, and that's our last audit from year 1, which is the selection of professional service contractors. So it's how the district has selected its architects and awarded contracts to professional service firms. We completed 8 investigations last year. We currently have 3 investigations underway. And we prepared a draft of our annual work plan for the second year, which includes 7 audits, which is in the process of going to the board and getting vetted out. And as soon as I know that I can bring it to you, maybe by the next meeting, we'll have to see. We'll go ahead and bring that to you, and you'll hopefully be able to comment on and give me feedback about what it is that you think, what areas that I should be auditing and reviewing for the second year. Does anyone have any questions on that information?
Is there anything significant that you have found that you need to know about?
I'm just taking a moment to make sure that I don't say anything
that
I'm not supposed to say.
Did you not lose? She'll stop you.
I don't know about that.
We have organizational independence here.
Yes, that's true. We do not wish you to say anything that you should.
Oh, no, I understand that. No. Well, there's been a few whistleblower reports that we've actually followed up on and conducted kind of a preliminary investigation on. that related to our program manager, different allegations regarding the performance, and we've reported that there's no merit to those allegations. We delivered a preliminary report to the board at the last meeting. Seems like there can be a lot of allegations that whistleblowers come forth with that don't have any merit. So we reported that. We're continuing to support some of the ongoing contractor litigation cases and investigations, and that'll continue until such time that the board takes action. So with that, let's segue into, I want to talk about the audit before I pass out copies of it so that, you know, you'll have a chance to read it, and it's also posted on our website. But this was an interesting audit that we did. We examined how the program manager, URS, and the 9 college project manager firms manage their reimbursable expenses. Reimbursable expenses per their contract is anything from bottled water to supplies, to rent for the CPM trailers, to anything that's outside of their fees for labor and for staff that they supply. So it's an area where there could be a lot going on, and CPMs or URS could be submitting things that are not allowed for their contract or not allowed for Proposition 39. So the audit reviewed how they were complying and processing the invoices related to following Prop 39, following the cost principles, which, as you know, was adopted by the board and dictates what is allowed from Prop 39 and what is not allowed, and check to see how their invoices were supported. Were they accurately billed, and were they adequately supported with documentation? We tested the period from April 2007 through June of 2011. We looked at approximately $700,000 worth of reimbursable expenses. The summary of our results was that we found no exceptions to any non-compliance to Proposition 39. Part of that is, prior to the adoption of the cost principles, which was almost 2 years ago, there was not a black and white definition of what was compliant or not, but we did not find anything that would even fall into the gray area of what they shouldn't have submitted. We did find some exceptions related to items that were reimbursed that either didn't have adequate documentation or weren't allowed per their contract. We found a total of, but it was small. It was only $12,000, almost $13,000. So out of $660,000 of reimbursables we looked at, we only found maybe $13,000 that was not allowed. And that's a good thing. And that there's a number of things that account for that. One is the CPMs, all 9 of them, although there are no policies and procedures that are in place to tell them how to manage this or how to check against, other than the cost principles, they actually used their professional management expertise and developed their own procedures and were able to then vet out and do a checks and balances before they submitted it. Also, URS did a good job of reviewing all the invoices and making sure that they rejected reimbursable expenses in a timely manner. There has been a significant increase in the a reduction in anything found that's non-compliant since the cost principles have been adopted. Some of the things that we're recommending out of this audit is that the CM and the PM kind of standardize their procedures, because although they created their own, they're sort of not uniformed. And so we've requested that both the CPMs and URS look at their procedures, and they've agreed to all our findings. We've also added things like they should be better on documenting when they submit something that they've purchased. We want to see that they received it. We want to see a packing slip. We want to know that what we're paying for was actually received. And lastly, we recommended 2 proposals to the cost principles, this being kind of the guideline for how we spend the bond money. One is we are recommending that the cost principles exclude the purchase of bottled water for the bond program. This was kind of a pet peeve of mine, I will say. We're proposing that we don't allow the purchase of bottled water except to sites where, of course, there's no potable water available. Better than that, excluded. And also, this has already been incorporated to the cost principles, we're excluding the use of bond funds for any type of food expenses. We have seen in the past CPMs submitting reimbursables for lunches, for coffee, for the trailers, for creamer and sugar, things like that. This has already been put in place in the revision of the cost principles, which is already adopted. So no food except for groundbreaking ceremonies, topping off ceremonies for projects, ribbon cutting ceremonies, and some safety events. And so we think that really tightens up for the CPMs and the PMs what they can spend bond money on.
And our food that we eat here does not come from the bond fund.
It does not.
No,
it is
so bad.
It's one of the best lunches I've ever had.
Well, thank you. And I'll leave
this. Well, I assume those $12,000 in expenses have been reimbursed and all of that sort of thing.
Yes. What we do is we make recommendations to URS, and then they go ahead and correspond with the CPM to reconcile and make sure that for any individual CPM's firm, it gets deducted from their next invoice. How they do it.
Nice job.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thanks, you very much. Appreciate it. I fully aware that most of us have other lives going on and other things we're doing that are on this committee. If you can take time to read some of the reports you get, it would certainly help. And if you have ideas that we need to put on the agenda, please make sure that you communicate with them by email or something. I took this report from the independent review panel, and mine is written all over as I looked at some of the things there, because at some point in time, we may have to respond to some of this. But the same thing, please take time to look at her report and see if there's anything that you might want to put a question next time or have ready. It takes time, and it's dull reading all of it. But you know, if you can't go sleep at night, that might help. Okay. Chancellor, it is your time on. And I already had a question about the election, but I said we were going to speak to it.
Thank you. Nancy, if I may, a few personals first. Let me apologize to you and your committee colleagues for being late. What is that expression? Unavoidably detained. Couldn't get here. So I apologize for being tardy. And a special welcome to Daryl Holt. Good to see you.
Thank you.
I am prepared to give a very brief report on the two items that are noted on the agenda, namely the appointments policy, and secondly, as you've seen, an update on the Inspector General investigation. I wanted as well, if I could take a liberty for just a few minutes more, I might comment on that report you just held up, Nancy, as well.
Yeah, independent review.
But to the appointments policy, I just wanted to clear up what may have been some confusion earlier about elections for the DCOC, because I had an alert from the staff about the administrative regulations governing both the appointments of the chair of this committee as well as the chairs of the college committees. I'm new enough that I'm not too embarrassed about this, that the appointment of this particular chair is in the province of the chancellor. And so what that means is, as a kind of a sidebar, the regulation talks about that appointment being made either on July 1st or by the first meeting following. So I've taken the liberty to exercise my authority and imposed on Nancy to stay in this role until the end of June. And then as the new fiscal year begins, I'll have another responsibility for another appointment. Thank you for being willing to do that.
It's on my schedule.
I wanted, secondly, and maybe I'll just expand this a tiny bit for the members who are new, I did want to comment a little bit on the second entry having to do with the investigations over the appointment of the Inspector General. If you're new to this process, I can tell you that during 2011, among a number of reviews, audits of the bond program, one that distinguished itself by its complexity and length was done by the State Comptroller's Office, John Chung. And that audit had a number of findings in a variety of categories, one of which had to do with both the process that led to the selection of the Inspector General and the qualifications of the Inspector General who was selected by the Board of Trustees. If you were watching us during that period, you'll recall that we reported to you the management responses that the district made to the full report. And additionally, at my request, the board president called a special meeting, at which time Mr. Chung's representatives made their case orally about their findings. And I, representing management, had the opportunity to explain to the board our response to those findings. I only give you that context because within those management responses and that oral report was this topic of the selection of and the qualifications of the Inspector General who just presented to you. As a result of that, I think this is the right noun, controversy, the board also, I thought, made good judgment available by inviting both the district attorney and the Office of the City Controller to review this issue. We have just concluded, we have just concluded the review by the Office of the District Attorney. And that review included, as you might surmise, a consideration of a number of documents surrounding the search process, beginning with the original charge of the board, the work of its committee, one of whose members is here, Mona Field, and the process that led to the review by me and my recommendation to the board. So that review by the district attorney looked largely, almost exclusively, at the process. And as I say, we believe that is concluded. We're awaiting some message from the office about their findings. Side by side with that, as I mentioned, the board also requested, Mr. Santiago and I requested a separate review by the Office of the City Controller. We've met with Wendy Gruhl and her staff and arranged that. In turn, a firm has been selected to conduct that review. They have, I think at this stage, Camille could maybe add value here because she's our liaison, but they have largely set up a schedule for the review of certain documents. I'm expecting they will be largely the ones the DA's office looked at. And my understanding from staff is that certain interviews are starting to be scheduled. So we don't have a timeline for when that will be concluded. One doesn't ask that question. That's the protocol. But we expect that we're probably looking at, you know, a month or two before we have some concrete data. Mona, if you'd like to add to that.
I'm always looking at Camille, but I think she'll jump at me if I say wrong things, yeah. I'm sure. And with your permission, the chair, I just want people to know, because I was one of two board members who sat in on a small part of the Inspector General hiring, I have been one who's been interviewed along with former trustee Sylvia Scott Hayes. So just to confirm, I did have my interview with the folks from the district attorney and on a most informal level, I believe I can say he indicated, although again, we haven't had it in writing, that they did not perceive an issue with our process. That was an informal impression I got. I want to say nothing official, but the gentleman who interviewed me did not seem to feel that anything was coming of this investigation. And I am scheduled next week for an interview with the people from the Wendy Gruhl audit on the same topic. So I feel in general, as the chancellor said, we're going to know within a few months. And again, based on my feeling and impression, I think we're going to find that the whole ruckus about that is going to die down. That's my personal thought at this moment.
Thank you. I would only add one other item, which maybe is a little more on the qualitative side. I think that the comments I want to make now, lastly on this topic, are not intended to be casual or to in any way suggest that I don't attach a great deal of importance to this, these set of studies, but I think they're important, and this is coming from a person trained in the humanities who believes in symbols. I think they're important for a very significant symbolic reason. There are such strong signals of the Board of Trustees' interest in the integrity side of the bond program. In the same way that we invited other people to look at us, we opened the books, we followed up on findings. This very narrow band of study of one small piece of the SCO's audit, we took very seriously, brought in extra help. So while I'm hopeful and like you believe that you know, the findings will warrant the decisions the board made, I wouldn't want you to overlook the symbolic importance of what the board has done here, because it's done it in a lot of other areas as well. And so while we're interested in the technical improvements, which you've seen over the last year, and there have been many of those, I think this softer side of the integrity quotient being a concern is really important, should be important to you and the roles that you play. Lastly, if I may, I wanted to just say a word about, in the spirit of kind of closing loops, that building program review panel, in which, of course, you are mentioned. Again, in the spirit of taking findings, taking reports, and not having them simply sit on a shelf, which often happens in some organizations, our board has done just the opposite. What that means is they have rekindled an existing committee called an ad hoc committee, which is kind of a special project, special task committee. It's populated by the board president, Miguel Santiago, Stephen Verez, and Lauren Field. And they have begun to work with me and some of my staff on those various recommendations from the panel, depending on how you count 15 to 18 recommendations. Maybe 3 to 5 of those are pure hardline policy issues. The remaining are technical improvements. And the purpose of these meetings is to, as we have used the committee before, is for the committee to reach certain conclusions. Let me use the word findings, so to speak. And in turn, make those recommendations to the full board for approval. We feel, as has been the case with all the other reports, audits we've received, we act on what we receive. We're getting pretty experienced at taking good news and bad news well, and there's a lot of good news in this report, if you've had a chance to read it. I mean, what it really says is that, you know, this is a pretty good program. It needs some refinements, and we're delineating what those might be at the policy level and the technical level, and it would behoove you, if you have an interest in quality, have an interest in the integrity quotient that your chancellor is talking about, you'll take this report seriously. And I'm here to tell you, and Mona can attest to it because she's been attending the meetings, that we are. So I think that the maybe the way I'll tie this up is to just share with you a comment that Mr. King and I made, Kobe King and I made recently when we met with an LA Times editor and some reporters. And it was actually, I'm kind of stealing Kobe's thunder, he was the one that said it, but we pre-planned it. And that is, we said to them, please stop in your writing referring to us as the troubled LACCD bond program. We are not troubled anymore. We have made great advancements, and it's about time, we argued, that we start getting some respect for the things we have tried to change. Are we done? Of course not. Continuous improvement means you always keep going. But we felt confident enough, and he and I have been sort of arm in arm for a long time on this program, we felt confident enough that we could say that to the Times based on the kind of robust response we have made, as with this panel report, to previous audits. And I think it's important for you to know that, that we are doing our best not only on these technical policy issues, but also doing our best to respond to these external stimuli, like the media, which of course form opinions about our organization. So we will see in future.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. While we were there, we urged them to consider some of the other things that the district does beyond building buildings. And you may have seen a terrific article about a great program at Southwest College, our student success program there. In the same week, a very, I thought, instructive article about state finance as it relates to this particular community college and recent cuts that we are absorbing. So, you know, that I think, Hobie, was a pretty good session, and again, not the two articles are any indication of a trend. But I felt very good about the positive nature of both of those articles. I know I've extended my time.
No, you're fine. I have a question, and that is that would it be, I don't know if it's appropriate or whatnot, that this committee takes some time to look at this report, just like we did at the other audits, to see if there's anything that we need to be about as we go through our process, or even if whether you would like someone from this committee to be part of the process that is looking at this report.
You know, I think that the where I thought you were going with the first part, and maybe I'll put it out there even though you didn't say it, is that I'm certain that in a way that the chair of the committee, of the building program review panel committee, spoke to the board and actually presented a report on behalf of the panel. I'm quite certain that he or one of his associates, if you wish to have them come here, would be more than happy to, you know, to do that.
Okay.
To give you the primary source data. This is the panel's report. It's not a staff report.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you feel that would be useful to your colleagues, we can certainly do that. I think that, you know, I would want to take your idea back to the ad hoc committee about somehow working in the DCOC. I think minimally it can be a part of the exchanges that you have with board leadership. I think one's coming up in April. And we could see whether or not that could lead to something for the larger group. But I would want to make that decision on my own because right now it's kind of their committee.
Yes.
And their existence turns on reaching common conclusions and advancing those to the trustees.
Yes,
their body as a whole.
Private committee, or whatever word you want to use.
But minimally, I think you have the list. Did we not give you the list of the recommendations, Tom? Did you circulate that?
We circulated the report.
And the recommendations are in it.
Yeah, we
can give them.
We have reframed something for that committee, which separates out policy versus non-policy issues. Let us minimally give that to you, and behind that I'd say, while I haven't formulated this all in my head yet, of course we would be reporting to you on what the trustees' positions are on those various recommendations. But let me take that back, Nancy, to the committee,
okay,
and I'll report back to you.
All right, so that would it be possible then, Tom, that for our next meeting in April that you have a summary of the recommendations and we'll put it on the agenda as an agenda item?
Sure.
Yes.
I would like to make a statement because I did read it thoroughly and commented to Mr. Odessa. I think it was an excellent job,
mm-hmm,
and I think they did a really good job. I'm kind of a skeptic in the guy always looking to uncover the dirt and the mud in this organization, but I complimented Mr. Labissa about how well it was done, and I thought the recommendations were excellent, and I complimented him in writing. And the one thing is what you already started on today is the action plan behind those recommendations, and you're already doing that. So I feel really good about this, guys, and that's rare for me. But I really feel...
He's our in-house cynic.
Well, I'm the in-house cynic, but that's okay. You've got to balance with those optimistic people.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just think it was really well done. If you haven't read it, and you'll be really impressed on how quickly this group got together.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously devoted a ton amount of time and mental energy to this. And I think it'll answer a lot of our individual questions and answer most of mine.
I'll pass along your comments to the chairman.
It's a very, very thoughtful report, and it is truly is from the outside looking in with data that they gathered.
Which report are you referring to?
The independent review panel report, which was the panel that was set up to take a look after the audits and whatnot of what's going on. And it really is it was online to you, but if you want a copy, ask Lynn or someone else and they will get you a copy.
I might add, it has the charge to handle and contain within the report.
Of what the committee, yep, that's right.
So you can both see what I asked them to study, and of course, there are numerous responses to that charge.
And so if we have the recommendations and whatnot at the next meeting for us to look at, it'll be with your materials, it'll come with your agenda, so you can look it over before we come. Anything else? Any questions?
You can send it to me by courier mail.
Thank you, Dr. LaVista.
You're welcome.
Okay, man, remember we've got 35 more minutes left. Program update. This is the most time you've ever had on our agenda.
Absolutely.
What are you going to do?
35 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to move over here so everybody can see me.
Okay.
I got several little things here.
I didn't do it this time.
No.
I usually do it.
I'm covering.
I had a philosophy in my house that every child is allowed to drink, to spill 10 gallons of liquid between the ages of being a young child until they were 16. So I can't yell at them until they have at least 10 gallons of liquid spilled on the floor. And I put it back in place as all of us got old vision because I missed parts of my visual field.
What I'm handing out, and I know one of the topics on here is the moratorium, and just to bring you up to speed where we're at in this process. So you're going to get two copies in the moratorium. One copy is a list of projects that are on the moratorium, and another copy is a list of projects that are not subject to the moratorium. So we went through a process of throwing everything in the basket on the moratorium list and then taking a look at each of those and deciding there were some of those that didn't make sense to be on the moratorium. And we took those off right away. And then the rest of the things that are on the moratorium, there's a process that will take place as we go through it to determine which ones will come off the moratorium. So we've had a couple meetings with bond steering and presidents, and we're working through that process, and we will continue to work through that process. So there were, if you look at the list, this list right here, these are the projects that are on the what we call the final moratorium list. Mm-hmm. It's two-sided. Now, what we start doing is working on each of those projects to see the merits of those projects as far as, you know, how much is it adding in square footage to the district versus how much are we taking off in square footage, whether it's a new building being replaced or an old building being replaced by a new building, or whether it's a new building and there is nothing coming out of service. We start looking at our M&O costs, our maintenance and operation costs, and our utility costs for the additional square footage. We also look at the college's space utilization, and that means how much space do they really need to service the students, you know. So we're looking at all those factors, and then we will also look at, and the most important piece of this, it's the educational plan that drives the master plan. So for the facilities, so we need to go back and make sure that we are meeting the needs of the educational plan in order for us to move forward with some of these projects. So this is one list that I handed out. The second list are those things that we took a look at and said they don't need to be on the moratorium list. At the bottom of the page, you'll see two totals. The first total there is the initial review phase, and those are projects all above here that are totaled up. These are projects that came off for one reason or another. It was either in support of another a project that's underway, or it's a regulatory thing, or it's a business decision by the district. In some cases, that in order to continue to function as a district, we need to improve certain pieces of it. So there are a category here with all those listed separately and why they came off the list. And then down below that, we didn't stop anything that was in the actual construction process. So you see there's about $835 million worth of construction that's underway. Those projects did not stop. Those kept going. We stopped projects in the design phase or before they went into construction. And right now we're working through that process. So that's kind of a update on the moratorium. Does anybody have any questions about the moratorium?
Yes.
I have several. The criteria, I've been asking for a while what the rubric was regarding the chancellor's moratorium of what projects are going to be on the list and what projects aren't. You gave a few listings of how much square footage are we adding or taking off, how we are appropriately servicing our students. But some concerns that I have regarding the moratorium list. I understand that it's extended till November or till next April.
No, the original date was November. It's highly unlikely that will be the ending date for the moratorium.
So it'll extend beyond that?
No, it'll be earlier than that.
Earlier? And that actually answers a lot of my questions, because a lot of the colleges are asking and the students on our campuses are asking, when are the buildings going to be finished? Some of the colleges have skeletal structures for the buildings that are up, and it's just steel everywhere, and it's really unattractive. But a more serious question is, a lot of the departments are now squished into certain buildings. And while their old building is being renovated, but with this moratorium, it slowed down the process. One question that I have is, what is the time frame of the investigation for the moratorium list to be completed?
Yeah, let me jump in and describe a meeting that I helped to plan that didn't attend. Tom can maybe add value as I do so. Presidents of the colleges and their CPMs met just this morning to identify the criteria that would be employed in allowing colleges to pull projects off the list and proceed with them. An important context, though I realize now it was inadvertent, had to do with the audits I just mentioned a few moments ago. Because really what this moratorium is about is a very strong message from both the state controller and other sources that we make very sure before we continue to build the program out fully that we have the money to pay for it. Since that report was issued, we've not only had continued hemorrhaging on the financial side, but we've had to endure considerable decreases in enrollment. So now it makes even more sense to review what level of building out we do based on our shrunken enrollment and our diminished financial resources. So the criteria, please jump in, Tom, that were identified this morning, those that colleges need to respond to essentially, let me use this word, prove that their enrollment levels and their financial levels are sufficient to warrant continued buildup. So maybe I'll pause there again, because I was not at the meeting. I just saw the last 5 minutes of it as I arrived for a different meeting. Tom, you want to speak more to that?
So today's meeting, what we talked about was, how much space do you need, okay? And then also, how are you going to pay for it, the additional space that you're adding, or, to take a look at that, because, and this was one of the things that came up in the SCO report that we saw that there was a issue there that saying, how are you going to pay for this and do you need the space? So those are questions that we have to answer. Okay, and what we see is that if you add space, you have to add people to take care of it. You have to add, you have to figure in what the utilities are going to be, and you have to figure in what the supplies and equipment are going to be needed to take care of that space. You know, so anything we add, we got to take that into consideration if it's an increase in square footage. If it's a decrease in square footage, then that comes to benefit us in another way, and it reduces our fixed cost. But if you start looking at the M&O cost, that's not the only thing we need to look at. If we have more space built than what we have students, because we don't have dollars to pay for the teachers to put students in the seats, you know, why do we need to continue to build additional space when we can't even fill the classrooms now because we don't have the money to fill the classrooms? So we have to slow down, take a pause, look at all these projects, and say the first priority is, you know, if you're looking at adding space and we don't have the enrollment to justify that additional space, then how can you justify that? Now, if it's an infrastructure type project that's going to support and reduce cost of the colleges, you know, and put more money back into the operational budget so you can hire more teachers, you know, then that would make sense to do something like that. So we have to wade through all these different criteria, you know, in order to say this is the best way to spend the bond money in order to keep us serving the most amount of students.
But Tom, it sounds like the two criteria that I've heard are how much space, and is that too much space, I guess, and is the M&O sufficient? What were the other criteria?
Those were the focus of today's meeting. Right. Okay. That's the first flush. Okay, we still have to look at, you know, how is it meeting the educational needs of the campus? You know, the other thing we have to look at is, you know, what buildings do we have out there that we're trying to service people in, and how are they meeting those functional needs? If people are in bungalows, so to speak, and we have them spread out, you know, and you're having trouble supporting that function of education, you know, we got to look at all those pieces, because the reality is, you know, it's not just about buildings, it's about how we educate students. And, you know, and we need to make sure that we have buildings that are state of the art that we can use to teach students in, you know, but we can't go broke in the process of overbuilding our program.
Jaden made a comment that I guess I need clarification. If a building is under construction now, that steel that you were referring to, that building is not on the list to put on. It's not on the moratorium because it's already under construction. Is that true?
Absolutely, it's still under construction. You know, anything that's under construction is still under construction. We didn't stop those projects. These were it's a pause to look at the projects that are not under construction to see which ones we want to move forward is and how that compares to the educational plan, how that it compares to the facilities plan. You know, so we have to look at those pieces yet.
So
there are a couple of locations where there have been issues with the contractor, and so construction may have stopped because of issues with the contractor, not because of the moratorium.
Right. Good point.
Okay.
Good point.
So, you know, there are a couple of places where it might look like there's nothing going on, and that's true, but it's because it's not because they've been stopped on this basis.
That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Thank you.
I could just make one other comment without appearing to start a revolution. Because what I'm going to say to you, I've also said to the new student trustee. It's really important for students, and you're now in a position of leadership, so you can help fuel this idea. It's really important for students to know that the district wants to build as many buildings as we can. What you can do in terms of your focus as students, I think, is to be a part of a growing statewide initiative that seeks to bring attention to policymakers in Sacramento, how sorely underfunded we are, how in the last 3 years we have had a 23.8% reduction in our budget. We just got $150 million surprise for the current year. We're facing another $13 million cut next year. So I think with the thousands of students that we serve, again, I'm not trying to be a revolutionary here, but but there is a growing involvement of students, and boy, I sure hope, as I'm told is the case, that our students, our nine colleges, are getting involved in calling attention to the sorely needed funds that we require to respond to record high demand for college and growing unemployment. So, boy, you know, not in any way minimizing the interest you obviously have as you show with your questions, but, you know, it's a little bit like my own sort of curiosity about some of these recent Occupy programs that students had. There seemed to be a piece missing as a demonstration. There was a demonstration, but there was no demand in a lot of those university and college-based Occupy events. So, boy, here's a chance for you at a critical time with other student leaders to get involved and get your fellow students involved in calling attention to these reductions. They are so severe, so severe.
And community colleges in Alachua are going to be impacted even further as the state colleges cut down their enrollments, and they always have, and so it's going to become a spiraling
right.
program, our problem along the way.
I'd like to weigh in from the operational side of things. Obviously, we, you know, as colleges, we have our dreams and aspirations of what our facilities are going to look like. Obviously, we want to get out of the old temporaries and into modern, you know, current, up-to-date, attractive facilities where you're not worrying whether you're going to fall through the floor, you're worrying about whether you can understand what your instructor is saying and what your classmates are saying. That's easy to understand and support. The stark contrast here, and this is very difficult for us to say while we're trying to dream that dream, is can I pay my $1.1 million utilities bill? And should I add to that utilities bill to pay for new facilities when I can't supply the physics lab with all the equipment that they need? Or when I can't offer enough instruction for students in aviation technology to finish their program in 2 years? It's a very painful decision to make. You know, emotionally one rails against it. The rules are tough. The questions are easy. Answering them is very difficult. Okay. But the rules are tough, but they make sense because they ask us to justify to ourselves first. And to that student who walks in the door to me and says, why can't I get out of here? And I don't want to say, because we built a building that we have to pay more utilities for when we've got classrooms already. And if we can answer those questions to ourselves, then we can answer them to the moratorium investigation, to use your word. And we believe we can move forward. And if we can't answer them to ourselves, then we won't be able to answer them to our accreditation team coming in 3 weeks that's going to ask us very directly, you know, what is the total cost of ownership on your facilities? Can you afford to maintain these facilities clean and in good repair? So, you know, much as we'd love to see our next building start, we fear finishing it and not being able to operate it responsibly.
Before this building program ever came into effect, I was also teaching, and as well as being director of the admission program. I have this problem of being intense in what I'm doing. And I was sitting in my office at 1 o'clock in the morning one time. I kept hearing some noise and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I finally went over and pulled up. And here I had a handy little rat's nest in one of my couches in my office. And they didn't wake up until nighttime. But because I was there, I was hearing them. The next day, a lecturer was going, or it was in one of our bigger lecture halls. And the lecturer was hearing something, and we called a maintenance person to come. And as he pulled back the panel, a dead rat fell on his head. And needless to say, we tried to point out, although this was supposedly one of the more modern buildings, we had some problems on our roof and other things that were creating health hazards. But this, thankfully, this the LA Times did not hear. But anyway, so that it is important for maintenance. It doesn't matter how technologically wonderful the building might be and its construction. If you can't maintain it and keep it sanitary and clean and functional and in repair, because things will wear out, like roofs, etc., then there's no point in having spent the money in the first place.
You know, my concern is that, and I know this is all sort of, there's terrible choices here, but this recession is not going to last forever. And I don't think we should be governed too heavy with the notion that all the attendance is decreasing now, because
it's going to increase.
It will increase, and we have to be prepared. Otherwise, you're going to have increased attendance in the future, and you won't have the buildings or the facilities to handle it. Now, I happen to come from representing one of those bungalow colleges, as you well know, Tom, I think. And a lot of our work is still to be done in the future because they were doing a great planning ahead of time. And we're sort of stuck in limbo with this moratorium now. Now, I agree the moratorium has to happen, the review has to happen. What can be done to make this move faster? Do you need to get more people involved in it or what? Because the longer you take, the opportunity you have now to get contractors cheaply
at the best price
is going to be lost.
In the way that the preliminary list, I think, was developed through an orderly process, we're aiming for the same order with this one. And I understand, unless it changed since you and I, Lloyd, talked, that the ending date for responding to the criteria is March 30th, right? End of March?
I think March 24th.
But if colleges are able to respond earlier, their appeal, their responses to the criteria will be dealt with as they come in. I think the key point was trying to get some draft criteria, which we will now work with our governance group to review, our bond steering committee, so they have their proper involvement. And then we're going to turn the presidents loose. I'm sure some have started already, even pending the bond steering committee review, because of the sense of urgency that you're raising.
But also, let's not lose faith in the future. I mean, sometimes some of the thoughts I heard were a little too glum that, oh, well, this is going to be a downward slope forever. It won't be. California, I mean, I've been through, but you know, anyone my age has been through more than a few recessions.
I think the tricky business is trying to adopt that philosophy, which I think most of us support, and still having, during that transition time, sufficient revenue to carry the additional space that we create. We have, you know, keep in mind that as a system, we have turned away almost 300,000 students the last 3 years. So it's going to take a long time to bring that number back up, because we can't bring the number back up until we have increased state funding. So you're right, though, there has to be the proper balance between being somewhat frugal and yet being opportunistic, because it's not going to last forever. And that's the tricky part of this. That's the tricky question the board has to reconcile.
So you're saying if a particular college brings their reports back, they will get reviewed at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah. As we go through that process, you know, the moratorium gives us a chance to pause and take a look. Okay. If a project is just adding additional square footage, you know, it's going to be hard to justify adding additional square footage, where a project that's looking at replacing an outdated building, you know, would probably move faster in the process, because it's actually replacing
square footage
that we already have in service that needs to be replaced.
Well, what if it's a new construction that really fits quite well in the college's master plan and is almost necessary for the future? I mean, shouldn't that be treated a little different than just building a building for the sake of building a building?
Part of the things we also compare against is what the state says is the adequate number of square feet that we should be using for that education service at that college. So we have to look at the utilization of the existing space and the utilization of additional space as we move forward, because if we are in a situation where we have more space than what we need, we have to take a look at that and say, okay, why are we adding more space and more costs if we don't need the space to begin with? Now that speaks to the idea of, you know, some of these things we're going to have to talk about are what buildings come down if it's a replacement of structures, so that we don't add additional square footage. You know, so those are things that we have to look at.
Assuming you have everything...
Can Ethel ask a question? Finish your question, and then Ethel.
Okay. Assuming you have everything in by March 31st, that's the deadline. You want everything in, right?
Right.
If that's done, how long will it take for you to have the whole...
Do we answer that question?
I think we ought to be saying that we ought to have a target date and say we're going to meet that, and we have to get more people involved to do it, then we need to do that.
But you're making an assumption there that everything is going to move forward.
Right.
And you can't make that assumption. We have to look at each project on a project-by-project basis.
Yeah.
So the other thing, let me just throw into, you know, the should have pointed this out earlier, but while this is an important process, it's not occurring in isolation. Some of the decisions the board has to make about fund sources and uses of funds that come out of this review panel report are clearly tied to this. Will there be additional dollars, for example, to come loose because they decided not to do satellite centers? Will they take the panel's recommendation to create a larger central reserve fund? There are a lot of policy issues in there that have financial overtones that must be considered side by side with this approval process that we're discussing. And those have not, as I indicated, have not been fully worked through by the, never mind the board, even the ad hoc committee. But there are issues that are tied to the total amount of money that's available for the program.
Yes, sir.
I think Nancy raised an issue that we've kind of sloughed off. In setting up budgets for the building of these new buildings, for adding square footage, was included in that maintenance, the hiring of additional maintenance, which might be necessary, cleaning supplies, gardening, all of the things that go to support new buildings, otherwise you're going to have more mice.
So
was that included in these budgets? Because I remember in the past, when I was still teaching, that we sometimes would discuss this. There were always buildings, things we were talking about, adding buildings. We never talked about how you support those buildings.
So there's two pieces of that. One, when we started the program, you have to remember the economy was really different. We were on a growth mode. The state was rewarding us for growing our enrollment. The last few years, we haven't seen that. In fact, we've seen a cutting of funds. You know, so that's our operational dollars. Okay, that's where we pay for the maintenance and operation. It's the same dollars we use for utilities. It's the same dollars we use for teacher salaries.
Oh.
So it's the bond funds are separate funds. We can't use that for operations. We have to use that only for the construction process.
So is there money for operations, or
that's what we're looking at?
That's why you're these talking projects about teacher salaries and you're talking about operations.
That's why these projects are being reviewed.
Yes, sure. That's the whole purpose of the moratorium, to see if we get what we can afford as we move forward.
Yes.
Just some experience of my own on this committee. I when the bonds were passed, and as they have been passed over the years, obviously the district looked at it, the Board of Trustees, that there were needs that were not being met at the community college level. You have portable buildings that some students are in. That's why the whole program, the community college district, is, as well as schools throughout California, had gotten so far behind. And it was even during the boom years, the so-called boom years,
right,
they never could catch up on their deferred maintenance, on their needs for expansion, and that's why they went to passing bonds. All goes back to Prop 13 and how it was structured and the problems that it created with total educational funding in California. When the Los Angeles Unified School District started its $29 billion construction program, 30% of the students in that district were in portable buildings. Their expectation at the end of the $29 billion program that there still would be 30% of the students in portable buildings. That's how far behind they were. Their deferred maintenance budget was $30 billion. That's how far behind they were in keeping up with modernizing or repairing all of the issues that had been reported over the years by students, teachers, parents, and whomever, the M&O and maintenance and operation division and what have you. So, you know, you can talk about our
economy turning around, but unless we do something drastically different in Sacramento on funding schools and providing the needed resources, we're never going to catch up. This is a Band-Aid. Even this, what's the program now, $11 billion with matching funds and what have you?
No, it's about 6.2.
6.2, even with matching funds? I thought that added a lot more. But in any case, that's still a Band-Aid on the total needs over long term for this community college district, this one right here. So what the chancellor was talking about of action in Sacramento to talk about the realities at the ground level in community college districts and K through 12 is something that we all need to be involved with if we're ever going to change this whole process and find a way to truly fund our educational needs in California. We all know that California was number one 40 some years ago, and that all changed in 1973, I think it was.
78.
This is just the point of clarification, so I understand your moratorium. These will not be on the list.
Right. They were on the initial draft.
Right. This is what's on right now, but this is subject to change as you evaluate whatever is coming forth from the principals, the presidents, and the committee.
Yes.
So this will change from...
Yes, you'll see it decrease as we take things off the list, yes.
I just want to make sure.
Tom, what manner do they come off the list? I mean, are things being submitted to you now, and when they are submitted, you're looking at them and seeing and then maybe pulling them off the list? Are you waiting until the end of March to look at all the responses? And then if that's the case, when you start doing it, how do you do it? I mean, do you just start at the top of the list and go down, or do you do it by campus?
Each campus will be submitting a package of materials to us, and then we'll start that review process. And I would imagine that there'll be some projects that come off sooner than others if the case can be made that this project is really not going to cost the district money, it's going to save the district money, and it's meeting the educational need of the district. So that process, starts, I can't tell you when each project's going to come off because we have to sort through the criteria that it's turned into us.
Do the campuses prioritize them when they submit them?
Yes, we've asked that to take place.
Yes.
I've got a question. How are you rectifying the shortfall of $116 million here, the total budgets with anticipated expenditures, with your moratorium list?
So
is any of that going to be reconciled in there?
Well, it's not a shortfall yet. It's an anticipated if we continue the same, doing everything that's on the list.
Right.
The reality is we'll have to look at that as we move forward, and there'll be some policy decisions that'll have to come into play. But we haven't got all that sorted through. We're in the process of working on that, and that's part of discussion we'll be having at the ad hoc committee. It'll be also part of the discussion we'll have on some of the other teams as we start to look at which projects move forward. The program review panel report also recommended that we have a larger contingency fund because they didn't feel it was adequate enough. We have to have that discussion too.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some policies that will be involved in this process, and we have to make some decisions that way.
But the plan is to be under budget, to be on budget. Or are you talking about?
Well, we will finish the program on budget. We won't go over budget. We don't have the funds anywhere else to cover those, so we have to finish on budget.
Okay. Bob, just a minute. I'm noticing we're getting close to 2 o'clock, which is our starters, and there's still some other things he wants to do. May I have a motion to extend our meeting by 10 minutes, please?
So moved.
Yeah, may I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Anybody against? Thank you all for staying here and participating. Yes.
And I don't want to take up time too much. And again, very clearly stating, I am speaking as a very personal individual at this moment. I am not representing our board. I want to be real clear. I want to share some thoughts of this very important dialogue you've been having, what what the conflicts are for me about the future and the moratorium and what we will and won't. First of all, thank you for your question. We have to finish on budget. There's no place to borrow from, right? It's, I mean, in my view, I personally would not want to go back to the voters and say, well, whoops, you know, that's my personal opinion at this time, completely. And so we're clearly going to have to go through this complicated discussion. I think the moratorium's been really important, not just because the state controller told us we should do it, but because we needed to figure out what we really can realistically do. And all the comments made by college president about the pain on the campus and how students see, you know, things unfinished, all that is so real. And your comments about, well, things will turn around, let's build for the future. I mean, that's kind of the dilemma. Of course we would love to do that and build out for the projections of a time when the state of California and the voters support the kind of revenue measures that enable us to educate everyone who wants an education. The frightening part is we don't know yet. We don't know yet if we're going to have the resources for the maintenance, the operations, the utilities, the faculty, staff. And so it's just going to be this very painful and complex discussion for quite a while now, as we sort out what are we going to be able to do within the budget and to the best interests of our current and future students. I just wanted to share with you that's kind of how I see our very complicated but important moment. And I thank you so much for your role in this dialogue. I will look forward to hearing, you know, your continuing discussions as the board itself begins to, you know, make some decisions.
Thank you. Can Tom continue with his report, please?
Okay, I've got just a few more things because we've already talked about a few of them that were on my list of major actions, and I know this is part of reporting out to this committee and letting you know some of the things that are taking place. We've talked about FTR already, so I'm not going to report on that. We have a contractor, and I've reported on this one before, SMC, who was doing work at Mission College and doing work at Valley College. There was two projects that they had underway. That company was not performing to the standard that we expected, and we sent them letters and asked them to improve their performance, and in return they said they weren't going to do it and they walked off the job. Wow. So the surety for the company, both projects had two different sureties. They have stepped in and they are taking over the project. That construction will continue starting in March. So we are now at a solution where those buildings can go forward. One was a building at Mission College, and the other was a smaller project at Valley College. It was the terminal where the bus terminal area. So those two projects are now back in the construction process. I've talked about the moratorium. There was a bill that passed SB 293 that has to do with the reduction of retention that can be held by a public entity. And what that did was it said that, and this was sponsored by major contractors, that they didn't want the because of the economy, they didn't want public entities holding more money, so they asked that the retention be reduced to 5%. We were holding 10% in the past, but they did give us an option to go to the board and ask for relief from that if there was complexity in the project. And so we went to the board to ask for that, so that if we have a complex project that we can withhold more than the 5%, the 10% is traditional. When we get down towards the end of the project, we have a lot of stop notices that come in, and a lot of times that will be close to the 10% or maybe even exceed the 10%. If we're at 5%, then we're going to be in an issue if the contractor hasn't paid their subs.
Was this bill signed by the governor?
Yes. It went into effect January 1st.
Yeah.
So
10% is
we actually had posed this action, and then I don't know what happened, but it came through anyhow. But they did put an out in there where we can do a finding so that we can withhold the 10%. Yet, but we have to go through another process. Another thing that I wanted to report out is we, Turner Construction has ceased being the CPM firm at West LA, and we are in the process of a selection process for a new CPM firm for West LA. And we have an interim solution in there right now, and the college will be undertaking that process of the selection of the new CPM firm. A couple of other handouts that I had for you, and last time you'd asked for organizational charts, so you should have got those in the mail. If you didn't, there's copies up there. If anybody has any questions about how the organization is structured, you know, I'd be glad to work on that with you.
Pretty big organization.
I'm gonna hand out another copy, which is a report that we usually hand out to the trades, and it is about bidding and bid results, so you can take a look at that in your spare time. If you have any questions on it, yes.
I just have a question on this. Maybe all off base, but should the DCOC be on here somewhere or no?
You don't really report to the construction process,
but to the board.
We can in.
It should be on like to the board.
We can take a look at that. Because this was just from a certain level down.
I understand that part, but since we're involved in this now, you're giving to us, I was wondering because it should not be there reported before.
Okay, I'll take a look at that. There is one other thing that we wanted to hand out. It's a citizen's, do you have it there? It's a handbook, and we'd like you to take this with, and we'd like to probably agendize this the next time for discussion. You know, this is something that Nancy had worked on and Donna had worked on.
Is this the same one as came out in a smaller format?
You know, when the draft was here in December, Elliot Axelrod asked that we add a discussion of defense indemnity of the DCOC members. And I had done a demo about that a couple of years ago. So we've added that in as part of the revision.
So this replaces the small book?
Yeah.
Okay. It's for discussion too, you know, because you'll want to adopt any changes that might possibly be in that. And with that, that's all I had.
I want to commend you, by the way, for giving us 2 months worth of information instead of just one, so I want to thank you for that. I like heavy reading for some reason. I'm masochistic. But I wanted to thank you because that's a vast improvement from the last meeting I was at of just the 1 month, so thank you.
I'd just like to make a closing remark to put a cap on today's very healthy conversation. I'm sorry the Chancellor left before I got to comment on his earlier remark about wanting for us to move on from being described as the troubled program. We're dealing with very difficult issues when we talk about the moratorium. They're important issues, and this is a lovely discussion, painful as it is to have to deal with it. But as we deal with the moratorium, I want you to know that my college, today, we are moving out of temporaries that have been temporary since the college opened in 1969 into a new student services building. Today, as we speak about moratorium, we have the last day of eating out of a food truck that's gone on for 16 years. On Monday, we open a new cafe. So it's really important to just take a second and remember most of what's going on is moving forward. We started our semester this is one building. We started our semester on February 6th with a brand new general classroom building, where faculty are no longer having to climb a steep step of stairs with no elevator. They're going into a brand new facility. Students have modern classrooms where the technology worked on the first day, where they have something other than a chalkboard that's all scratched up. So in the grand scheme of things, it is always important to step back and say, let's look at the 99% that's going right, mm-hmm. as well as making sure that we work on that 1% that's just needing to be changed because conditions on the ground have changed. I am a glass half empty kind of person, but we need to remember to taste that half of the glass that is actually full. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to thank all of you for offering to serve on this committee. It takes a lot of time that people are not aware that we're doing, but they're very fast to criticize, and I know I thank all of you. There are three members that are going to be replaced, hopefully by the next meeting. Things came up in their lives that they could not continue to serve, but I do want to appreciate them. Marv Hoffman,
City College.
Bob Courtney, it's getting that time of day. Jose Rodriguez and Robert Schwartz.
Robert Schwartz is also City College.
Yeah. He's a foundation representative. He was foundation representative. So the chancellor is going to proceed to seek out replacements for them, and I asked if we could possibly have those filled by our next meeting because it does have to. Again, I want to thank you all. May I get a motion?
Move for a second.
Thank you all. Bye-bye. All approved.
Aye.
I'm a glass half full type. But
it ended a lot.
And now it's we
still have. Oh, when is it, sweetie?